Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Blockchain Socials podcast, and I'm your host. And today I have a special guest with me. Her name is Eliza Howitz, and she is a contributor to the Trustlines protocol. Hey, Eliza, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Good. So I was wondering if you could explain a bit, because it's an interesting project, what Trustlines is and how did you get involved?
Yeah, I'm a contributor to the Trustlines ecosystem. And I ended up in the blockchain world through a pretty non-traditional path, I think. I always kind of struggle to describe myself. But I first got into alternative currencies through my research and advocacy on universal basic income, specifically in framing it as like a monetary policy tool, not just like welfare, like the usual narrative. And that point is really important, because the question of how to define and to create money is, it's not given enough attention, and it's pretty critical to like having a healthy economy. So this is a multidisciplinary concept. It gets you to ask really tough questions about economics and governance and also law and technology. But I was drawn to alternative currencies because they let us be proactive. They let us experiment with new types of monetary systems. And yeah, so Trustlines is a project that I initially discovered through these interests. And I was following it, writing about it for a while before I, sort of officially became a contributor.
Basically, you had already an interest in these sort of alternative thinking around finance and around monetary policy, and that sort of led you to, I guess, blockchain world, which was another area which is also thinking about these questions as well.
I would say that. not all alternative currencies are blockchain based, but the blockchain based ones are, they're very interesting. And there's a variety of philosophies behind them. So it's not just the typical idea behind Bitcoin, for example. There's a diversity of ideas out there.
So maybe could you explain a bit how Trustlines works? I think it's a very different approach to money and to monetary systems when compared to, the normal financial system of today, and also with sort of the rest of cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin. It's not really, it's not something that tries to take its value from, sort of imposed scarcity, for example, but it's something quite different. Maybe you can explain a little bit how that works.
Okay, so in a nutshell, Trustlines is a decentralized mutual credit network, or you could also say a payment system based on peer-to-peer mutual credit. And what I really liked about Trustlines is that it's like a very flexible, basic, like sort of core infrastructure for creating any type of credit-based monetary system. Yeah, so it kind of goes into, you do have to ask a question about like what is money and how does money enter our economy and how should it enter our economy. And I think a lot of people who are interested in Trustlines are fascinated by this concept of what's been started to be called people-powered money. So like a type of money that is both that is whose issuance is both governed by people and whose issuance benefits the people. And so I think mutual credit in general is this old type of money where the money users are the ones who issue the currency. And this has a lot of advantages in specifically in those two respects. So the users are the ones who decide when to issue the money, and they are also implicitly the ones who are benefiting from its issuance.
This is opposed to, you know, the system of today right now, where you have, you know, sort of like the Federal Reserve, at least in America, you have the Federal Reserve that or central banks that sort of determine how money is given out to people or given out into the economy, largely via through commercial banks. They sort of have these different relationships. But in a system of mutual credits, this is, or at least in trust lines, it is a relationship between, at least at its most basic level, a relationship between two people. Is that sort of how it works?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, our current monetary system is based on, it's a credit-based system. And I mean, there's this influential paper by the Bank of England that kind of came out a few years ago that sort of broke the bad news to a lot of people that actually the vast majority of money in society right now is so-called bank money. It's literally issued by private commercial banks. And that's a necessary system, because it's better than the alternative, which is a static money supply. You know, banks enable us to have this dynamic credit-based form of money. The problem with that sort of system is, there are a few problems with that sort of system. I guess one of them is that since commercial interests are the arbiters of new money creation, it's becomes short-term profit-seeking activity that guides growth patterns rather than like bottom-up investment from a broad population with diverse values. Mm-hmm. You could also say that commercial banks find the current system and undeservedly lucrative arrangement due to special profits gained from being the money creators from what's called seigniorage. And that's a pretty opaque topic. That's
we know that the current money system is very opaque, and it's very it favors commercial interests, and commercial banks are in a wildly good position in that system. But so then, what is the alternative proposed in a system like trust lines?
Yeah, so with trust lines, money, you could look at, or I should say, trust lines can be used for a lot of different things. But one of the things that most contributors are excited about is the idea that we're creating, we're making it possible to create a new type of money. And so this is, or rather I should say an old type of money. Mutual credit is an old type of money. It predates the modern financial system. And it's appeared in various different forms. Mutual credit itself can be hard to define. The general idea is that it's non-exploitative credit that is issued between the entities or the people who are using the money in order to transact. And it generally, you know, mutual can mean that it's a reciprocal or a circular economy. Or it can also suggest in other interpretations that it's a mutualized credit arrangement where the risk of default is sort of socialized within a group. And so I guess I sort of lean into the first definition because with trust lines, the way that it is, that the system is designed, it's purely bilateral connections of trust that you can use to build multilateral credit relationships on top of. But
I think you have an example of what it would literally look like between people who have a line of credit between them.
Okay, so I have thought through a bunch of user stories previously. Let me see if I can use some of those examples. You could say that Sam and Andy, those are my two characters. So imagine if Sam is a stay-at-home parent and Andy is a babysitter. Sam and Andy might want to transact where Sam might want, you know, to use some of Andy's babysitting hours. And you could, like, for example, suppose they're both kind of low on cash and it would be really, really difficult for them to trade using their very limited supply of cash. So they could just agree to transact with, you know, based on credit. So Andy would do a few hours of babysitting and Sam in return would say, okay, now I owe you, three hours of something. And then later on, maybe Andy needs a ride to school and Sam has a car. So maybe Andy can pay Sam an hour in order to get a ride to school or something like that. So that's a kind of credit relationship that could go back and, you know, you don't need any money, any national currency or anything in order for these transactions to happen. It's all purely based on credit. These people are creating their own money, really. Like, that's really what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that makes it a little bit more clear. It's basically a relationship, just sort of represented through owing one thing or another to each other, and that sort of creates currency in sort of like the most basic sense, I feel.
Yeah. Another point to make is that in the really, like in the example I just described, nobody signed any documents. Nobody put up collateral. It was just based on trust. You can sign a contract or put up collateral when you're issuing credit to people, but you don't have to. And that's sort of part of the social agreement. That's sort of like outside the mechanics of what is actually happening.
Right. You don't need like a pot of gold in the middle to to represent like the storage of value or something, you know. But I guess that's the difference between a commodity and a credit theory of money, I guess. But so in trust lines, you're able to sort of digitally create these lines of mutual credit using blockchain. But I was wondering what types of units of account can you represent through a mutual line of credit in trust?
Oh, you can use anything. Anything you can dream of can be a unit of account. So like right now, I think there's about 47 different currency networks that are deployed So those include national currencies like, you know, dollars and euros, which we're all pretty familiar with. But they also include things like hours, so work hours, or favors is a community deployed currency network that I really love. Or you could also transact in like units of beer or something. You know, if you go out with friends and you end up owing someone a beer, you could keep a record of that using trust lines. And then it's like the way that the system is designed, anyone can create their own currency network with a different unit of account and different set some other parameters as well.
For transparency, we did exchange a few beers this past as well over trust. It works pretty well.
Yeah.
So the way I understand it is that Trustlines is, at the moment, it's a side chain of the Ethereum network.
That's sort of correct. Okay, so trust, there are many different things that you could be talking about when you say Trustlines.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to be clear, the core concept is, you know, the core concept is blockchain agnostic. It could be implemented on anything, on, you know, a private database if you want. But the system that we have right now is running on the Trustlines blockchain, which is a minimum viable proof of stake Ethereum sidechain. And the reason why we have our own blockchain is just for accessibility and affordability. Like, we wanted it to be, we recognize that the system, well, I say we, but it was all sort of built before I got here, but the system, it has to be fast and transactions have to be cheap. So these were the real requirements in designing this blockchain. It also, the system itself should be censorship resistant. That's sort of one of the, that's like the point of, I would say, of public blockchains in general. You don't want any entity, whether it be hackers or some malicious dictatorship, you don't want anyone to be able to freeze transactions or shut down the system or something. And so that's why, that's why a blockchain is used in the first place.
Maybe you can talk very briefly about, I think some people might be interested in how that sidechain works and the role of the TLN token and the Trustlines coin, very briefly.
Right. Okay. So there are two different tokens in the Trustlines ecosystem that are important to the ecosystem. There's the Trustlines network token, which is an ERC-20 token on the Ethereum main chain. And there's also the Trustlines network coin, which is the native token of the Trustlines blockchain that can be used for paying gas, basically, and network fees. So the Trustlines network tokens were the Ethereum tokens. Those were distributed through a Merkle drop to a wide range of people. And there will probably be further distributions in the future. You can convert your TLN tokens to TLC tokens. Oh, sorry, the Trustlines network token is nicknamed TLN.
Yeah.
Trustlines network coin is TLC, like my favorite band. And for now, so TLN can be converted into TLC. In order to be used on the Trustlines blockchain. We did a sort of cool thing. So I just don't like talking about the blockchain because the truth is that the end user like doesn't have to know even that this is built on a blockchain. And, you know, that was kind of one of the goals in designing the system, that we want all the advantages to using public blockchain, but we don't want to force users into this cycle of misery that is associated with purchasing a cryptocurrency and using it. So the
makes sense.
So for an end user to make transactions, they can actually use a delegate service that will pay their transaction fees on their behalf using TLC, and that can be done, like right now that's done, it's all for free. The Relay servers pay for your transactions if you want to use the Trustlines, one of the Trustlines currency networks right now. And in the future, delegates could exchange TL, you know, they could pay user fees on behalf of the user in exchange for credit within the currency network that the user is transacting in. So you would do this if the currency network was actually useful and you believed in it and you wanted, if you found that credit was valuable, then it would be not a big deal to trade your TLC for users' credits, if that makes sense.
Basically, TLC exists as a native token on the sidechain, but you don't need to have it or to use it. I think
right.
when we were exchanging beers with each other, I didn't need to purchase any cryptocurrency, any ERC-20 tokens. I didn't need to have TLC. So if I didn't know any better, I really wouldn't have known that this is using blockchain.
Cool. That's what we're going for. Oh, and if you're wondering, it's super cheap actually to run a validator node. It's like, I don't know, maybe $10 a month or something. So if you did want to, if you did want to be part of running the blockchain infrastructure, then it's pretty affordable. So it's not,
It's not like buying a bunch of like ASICs graphics cards to have a Bitcoin mine or something. a warehouse in who knows where.
Hey everyone, if you're enjoying this interview so far and want to be sure that more content like this can be created, you can donate to my efforts through Patreon. So on patreon.com/theblockchainsocialist, you can donate $3 per month or more to help me out and join other patrons like Andrew, Sam, Paul, Matthew, and the newest patron, Kendra. So at the moment, I've spent more on this project than I've ever earned from it due to hosting costs, so any amount really helps. In the future, I'm hoping to do more complex bits of content through video to help spread the message that blockchain doesn't have to be used to further entrench capitalist exploitation, as long as we put our efforts into it. So if that message resonates with you, I hope you'll consider helping out. If you can't help out financially, I completely understand. One thing that you can do instead is to subscribe to the podcast on your preferred platform, or even on the Blockchain Socialist YouTube channel if you prefer to listen there, and to leave a positive rating. Or as well, you can join and become an active member in the Crypto Leftist subreddit and Discord groups. So that's it from me. Here's the rest of the interview with Eliza Howitt from Trustlines.
But okay, so basically, the Trustlines protocol, which is a sidechain on Ethereum, is using this sort of idea around mutual credit to create this sort of system of, or this larger network of mutual credit, which is sort of an alternative to, I guess, status quo finance of today a little bit in a certain sense. But it gets, I think the interesting part comes with this network, you know, when there is a network effect. So I think it's easy to understand when you have, you know, one person and another person who has their own line of credit with each other. They sort of keep up with the, you know, I owe five rides, five babysitting sessions, for example. You can keep track of that. But then maybe it'd be interesting to explain what it looks like when there's a large network where sometimes maybe you want to transact with someone who you don't have a direct line of credit, but maybe you have a mutual friend with each other as the line of credit with the other.
Yeah, so you're getting at sort of the heart of what, you know, like what's the point of digitizing or formalizing these trust relationships in the first place?
Yeah.
And that is to do multi-hop transactions. Right. Okay. So first of all, just, I don't think I defined this yet, but a trust line is a thing. A trust line is defined as two bilateral credit lines and a balance. So like normally you would say, normally two credit lines could have two separate account balances, but with a trust line, they're collapsed into a single balance. So initially set at zero. And so if you and I each extend a line of credit to each other of 10 hours each, then you could say that the total capacity of our trust line is 20. And yeah, when you create a trust line, the first thing that you have to decide is what is your credit limit? So the maximum amount that can be borrowed. And that's, you know, it can be really high, but it can't, let's say a safe credit limit in this example, it would have been 10. And that just means that I'm willing to hold 10 units of debt from you, but not more than that.
Same beer.
Or beer. And so the reason that's important to predefine this relationship is because you can use those predefined relationships in order to conduct multi-hop transactions. So when you and I have created a trust line together of 10 units on either side, we are not actually making a payment. No one's sending a transaction. We're just formalizing this agreement, this relationship of trust between the two of us. And then if I wanted to transact with your friend, Bob.
Yes, my good friend, Bob.
And so suppose you and Bob also have a trust line of 10 units on each side. And what do I want to buy from Bob? French fries?
Sure, fries.
Okay, so I want to pay 5 units of credit to Bob in exchange for French fries. But Bob doesn't know me and doesn't trust me, doesn't have a trust line with me. So the way that we can make this transaction is through you, using you as an intermediary. And what really happens is I can pay you 5 credits. So my balance with you goes to -5 and your balance with me goes to +5. And meanwhile, you know, automatically, simultaneously, you can pay Bob 5 credits. So your balance with Bob goes to -5 and Bob's balance goes to +5. And, you know, so Bob ends up with a balance of +5 and he can now give me some delicious French fries. And you don't actually have to know that this transaction even took place, because for you, it's still net zero. So +5 with me and -5 with Bob cancels out, and
yeah,
it's net zero. As long as you equally value my credit with Bob's credit in this currency network.
Yeah. So we all use friend tokens, for example.
Yeah. But meanwhile, Bob is plus five, but Bob didn't have to open, you know, accept credit from someone he doesn't know. He's got plus five friend tokens from you, a person he knows and trusts. So it's like a very secure system. You never end up holding credit from someone you didn't already personally agree, you know, make an agreement with, have a trusted relationship with.
And at the end of this, still, you don't have to have a relationship with Bob if you don't want to.
Right. Yeah. Bob and I are using this system of credit just as if it was real, you know, quote unquote, real money. It's, for all intents and purposes, it appears to be exactly the same thing as a regular payment system. Especially, you know, if we were using euros to send that payment, it should feel exactly the same.
Yeah. And so this idea around, I guess, the mutual credits is also it's similar to like things like time banks in a way. If you trade in time and hours, if you want, for your labor. Of course, with trust lines, it doesn't, you know, hours is an option to actually use if you want. So it's sort of like the Marxist idea of labor vouchers, in some people have proposed before, which I think is also pretty interesting. But I think what I wanted to ask you, which I think would be interesting, is why do you think the left should care or be interested in something like lines?
Yeah, I think it's a super, so as long as you are not convinced that money is the root of all evil, as long as you can be willing to look at money as a tool, a tool for mutually beneficial exchange, then you should be open to trying to focus on human-centered monetary design and how do we get to a, you know, what are the right tools that we need to get to a monetary system that is healthy, that works for all of us and takes our, you know, community values into account. And so trust lines is like a very flexible tool that can be used to support a variety of different, you know, different denominations of currency, so different units of account, but also different types of economies. Like it can be used to build sort of more circular local economies, but it's also a very organic system that can map on to real economies or real trusted relationships look like in a global setting. It sort of is a way to organically connect a lot of diverse communities together.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's different from, I mean, we can for sure, the financial system used today. And then it sort of, I think, reverses the relationship that's the usual in cryptocurrency, I think, where the cryptocurrencies are generally created and then the community is formed around that. There are communities formed around a particular cryptocurrency, where in a system like this, it feels more like there's an existing community based around other things, more human things. And then you have this sort of shared system of something like that is pretty interesting from a left-wing politics point of view, or really maybe even anyone. So based on what you've been working on at Trust Lines, is there any particular circumstance or like setting or environment in which people would want to use a system like Trust Lines? Are there examples of that?
I would say, so in general, I would expect it to be most useful in situations where there is a scarcity of money, that's sort of where the idea of mutual credit shines. Whether that's, money is not going to solve scarcity of resources, but it can solve scarcity of money. Yeah. So to the extent that that's the source of your problems, then that's a really simple fix. So there, in countries or places where the national currency is not trusted or can't be used for some other reason, or those would be probably a good place to start using trust lines. And the other advantage to the system that we've built is it's accessible from a mobile phone. It's not something that you need to open a bank account to use, or have some hard to get government issued documents in order to get set up. It's accessible from a mobile device. So that's one advantage to using.
Yeah. I guess it's also, because there's the usual sort of arguments around like providing for the banked or the unbanked and the underbanked in sort of third world countries, which is used a lot. At least in my opinion, sort of very suspiciously and shadily by other cryptocurrency companies, just because giving people in a third world country access to cryptocurrencies can be a good or a bad thing, just depending on like how the market reacts. So instead of like, what I find interesting about this system is that it sort of removes the external factors of like the market, in a sense, like you are very poor and you just put your savings in Bitcoin to try to save your wealth, and then all of a sudden, the Bitcoin market crashes again, then you've lost a lot of that wealth that you may need pretty quickly. Whereas I think in the system of mutual credit, it's a lot more stable of a system, and it provides more trust, in a sense, than something like Bitcoin would necessarily provide.
Yeah. Mutual credit, at the end of the day, it's about exchange within, sustainable economic circles, or usually local circles of exchange. So like historically, mutual credit has been most successful in times of financial collapse. Like that was when the 30s, that was when the famous Via Bank, WIR Bank, mm-hmm. that's when they got started, and they were based on a mutual credit system.
My next question, I was about to ask you if there were historical examples of using such.
Yeah, sure.
Keep going.
Well, yeah, the commercial trade exchanges, so the Via Bank would be an example of that, were and still are pretty popular ideas, and they're usually used as a business to business trading network. They're also called like barter networks sometimes, although I guess if they're using a mutual credit system, it's fundamentally not barter. there's some pretty famous successful examples. Also Sardex would be another one. They emerged after the 2008 crash. And they work by the same logic, which is that businesses have resources and there's still productive capacity in the economy. And the only reason why they can't trade with each other may be because they're short on cash. And if that's the problem, if that's the real problem in the market, then you can solve that by creating credit between these businesses, and that's what mutual credit can do.
Yeah.
There's another type of system, like a more grassroots person-to-person system known as the local exchange trading system, or abbreviated LETS. And that's just an accounting system between members of a community that allows them to exchange without using, without using national currency. So it's the same concept, but applied to, person-to-person transaction. And it's usually organized as a nonprofit and volunteer run, and a lot less formal. And the relationships in that sort of system are based on trust usually. So that's more of the, that might be more true to the inspiration behind trust lines, although it can be used, as I said before, can be used for any type of trade relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Both person to person and business to business trade relationships is what I mean.
Yeah. In the B2B example, I think that, there are plenty of examples, I think, in history of times when businesses could have been running. They had the capacity to do so, but they can't because of money problems, crashes in the markets, or something like that. And sort of the usual solution nowadays tends to be like, either bailing them out or like providing like PPP loans or something like that that's going on right now in the US. But providing a system of mutual credit seems like it's an interesting alternative.
Yeah, it can be. Mutual credit can be either a complementary system to the existing financial system, or it can be an alternative. So it really depends on it depends on how you want to use it, because it can, like the systems I've just described, I guess barter exchanges, or sorry, the commercial trade exchanges, those are really complementary at their core, I think. But LETS systems, and also time banks, I didn't talk about time banks, but to the extent that time banks use the idea of mutual credit, like those could also be seen as complementary. But I think a lot of the people who use those systems would see them really as an alternative type of economy, that they would rather live in an economy where all money was just made up of mutual credit.
Let's say, for example, I would like to create a trust lines network with some people. Are there any limitations or even recommendations you can say at this point in terms of the size of a community for one trust line network?
Right. So the correct term to use, I guess, would be, well, actually, it depends what you're talking about. I think the correct term would be currency network, but so currency networks are shared platforms implicitly. And they usually, a currency network is like the most distinctive, property of a currency network is its unit of value. So like there's a euros currency network, a dollars currency network, an hours currency network. And if you opt into one of these currency networks, and by that I mean if you create a trust line with anybody using one of those currency networks, then you're sort of implicitly joining a big, a potentially global platform. So it can be used to connect with someone, on the complete opposite side of the world, as long as there's a path in the network of friends that are connecting you. So you can also have two different, totally isolated networks of friends that are not connected at all coexisting on the same currency network. That's also possible.
So in our test of the Trust Lines network, where we were exchanging beers, now since we have a a trust line together, then now I am able to potentially connect with anybody else who's also using the beer currency.
Yeah, as long as, so you would be able to transact with anyone in my network, for example. And so you would be able to transact with any of my friends, and you would also be able to transact with friends of my friends and friends of their friends and so on. But you wouldn't be able to transact with somebody else who joined the currency network, created a trust line totally separate and never connected to any of my extended network. But what I should also point out is that you asked like what are the guidelines on community size, and their trust lines is a bottom up system. There are no guidelines to community size because the relationships or the economic communities that emerge, they are not predefined by a central entity. They emerge organically from individual users connecting to other users that they have existing trusted relationships with. So it's a decentralized in the true sense of the word. It is a decentralized monetary system. And you can use the same idea of a trust line to create little like centralized systems within the decentralized system, but that at its core, and I guess that's a sort of a abstract thing to say, but I can talk more about that. I don't know if I did already, but the point is that it is fundamentally a decentralized system that's just interoperable with several different configurations of credit.
Potentially the community size doesn't necessarily matter so much in a system.
Yeah, well, it
depending on like it, potentially what you want.
Yeah, I mean, your community could be global, or
like it can't be too big.
No, it could. Okay, so maybe you should talk about this differently. So one of the problems with like the trade exchange systems and the let's communities that I was just talking about is the fact that those systems are centralized. I can't exactly say it's a problem, but it's a very different system when it's centralized. And there are advantages and disadvantages. The disadvantage is the community shouldn't, you know, cannot grow that large. You can't have a global system of lets because the fundamental idea is that everybody in the community should trust each other equally. And if your community size grows too large, then what tends to happen is the trust in the system breaks down. And that's because you know, it's the same idea as you would trust your neighbors, but you know, you'd be willing to lend your neighbor across the street like an hour of time or maybe 20 euros or something, because you know, they live across the street, you've got friends in common, even if you don't know them personally, there's some level of accountability there. But if it's somebody who lives two cities away from you, then that implicit trust tends to decline. Mm-hmm. And so there, like in larger communities, there's a higher number of so-called free riders and people who would take from the system but not contribute or something like that. And that's just a disadvantage of a centralized system. You can never prevent that, you know, especially if it's based on pure trust, but it's also, even if it's based on some extra contracts or something, it's just is just a lot harder to control. Yeah, so the thing about, and I guess, you know, there is an advantage to that type of system, which is that it's socialized. Like the risk of default is socialized, meaning in some ways it can be better for certain vulnerable people or entities. If they don't have enough trusted connections individually, then they can still sometimes be in the group and participate like that. So that would be the advantage. Yeah, but with trust lines, it's all the trusted connections are bilateral by design. And so you could mimic the centralized idea with just creating an organization account that opens trust lines with all of its members.
Mm-hmm.
But at its core, you know, you should not have to apply to an organization and be a member with some random group in order to use mutual credit. You know, if you want to access a system of mutual credit and just use it between individually trusted friends, you should be able to do that. And that's what TrustLines enables. It makes it super duper accessible to any use case and any person while still allowing centralized configurations of credit to exist.
Right. Blockchain provides sort of that standardization that enforces, but it also creates the ability to have an individual relationship, but also like a stable one without needing to join, you know, a central organization.
Yeah. And this, I should point out, I was just going to add that this is TrustLines is a very scalable form of mutual credit. So unlike existing centralized systems, a TrustLines currency network can literally be a global currency network. There's no problem with that.
Yeah. But so there seems to be a pretty high potential when you're making a network that it would largely fit within a geographic area, but it doesn't necessarily have to be, because I mean, just by virtue of the internet. Is this like the main difference between using trust lines versus using like a local currency?
Yeah, so trust lines can act like a local currency. So it's not mutually exclusive. I think you're right that probably a lot of natural community, or well, actually, wait, people within, like people using trust lines would be able to transact within the natural borders of natural economic circles that they're part of. So that would tend to be probably based on like local communities and regional, you know, currencies or regional economic circles. But it could also be any arbitrary ideological or whatever group that is connected by trusted relationships and that has a need to trade with each other. So if you're, I don't know, and in like an online gaming community, then potentially you could use trust lines to trade with each other and whatever, like, I don't know, swords or digital, like digital
whatever
swords.
Whatever they trade.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah, but like the natural, you know how we were talking about credit limits before? It's like, it's really important to set your credit limits with people, because those credit limits are literally the borders between different economic communities, if that makes sense. So natural economic communities will emerge from people creating trust lines and credit limits with each other in a decentralized way. You end up with what is effectively a bunch of local currency systems.
So then, I guess the credit line between, you know, between two people in different economic communities, sort of, it's sort of like, I don't know, like a valve or a pipe that is bigger or smaller that allows like the different communities to trade with each other. And if you have more connections between, then you have more capacity, I guess, between the communities. Then when you look at it.
If there's more capacity in your trust line with some other individual or community, then that helps tie those two communities together. And the reverse also.
Well, thanks a lot for taking the time. My last question was just, where can people learn more about trust lines and how can they contribute?
Cool. So there are a lot of resources online. What would be really valuable for us, I think, is if people would be interested in testing out the mobile app, which you can get at trustlines.app.
No, I'll have a link.
Yeah, cool. And the Trust Lines Foundation is the nonprofit that's kind of supporting this. So they have a website and a Twitter, so you can follow them. And we also have a blog, we have a forum, we have some docs pages. So if you're interested in diving into the system, then you can go there. Trustlines.network is a good website to start off on, I guess. You can also hit me up on, I have a Twitter, so Aliza Grox. Just reach out to me if you want to talk about trust lines.
Should people reach out to you directly if they want to, if they're thinking about implementing like a mutual
Yeah.
credit system within their community?
Yeah, definitely. Talk to me.
Right. Definitely will do. We'll see. Well, thanks a lot for taking time again. And yeah, Trust Science is a very cool project, and you guys are the best.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.